All right, welcome back. And we have Rachel Rees, who you have seen before doing a talk about microservices, together with John, and their life in the JET offices in Hoboken. Is that right?
That is right. So John, aka Moose, is our SVP of technology. We thought we'd bring him in for this chat on JET.
Very cool. So for the non-technical people, or academics like me, what does SVP actually mean?
Senior Vice President.
Oh, very well.
Executive Vice President now?
No.
Does it not mean?
Vice President.
We don't know what it means.
He's important. That's a
cool
TLDR.
So I think what we were planning for this is you actually wanted to show us the offices a bit, because unlike the previous talks from Europe where it was all dark, I guess Hoboken isn't New York, right? It's New Jersey, but it's across the street, across the water.
Oh, come on.
Here, see, we're literally across the water from New York City. So it's basically New York City.
It's basically New York City. It's across the water. And it looks like there's a nice office everywhere behind you.
There very much is. Let me grab my charger. And we can, yeah, thank you. And we can just start moving on. So we have a kitchen over here and a really fun lounge space.
I do know that lounge place because when I was visiting, I was doing one of your tech talks there.
This is about exactly where you stood, right here, facing out to the bleachers.
I think I just hope that our audience doesn't get sick from all the waving and walking around, but I think they'll manage.
I'll go quickly. Wanted to show off the awesome JET sign and the front lobby as well.
To Patrick and Drew.
Yeah, and here's two of our engineers, Patrick and Drew. Say hello.
Hello, hello. Do you like doing F sharp?
Yay! Very much are. All right, come with me, and we will go to a conference room and settle down now.
We just want to show our audience the nice views you get there. So now we'll just find the conference room and we'll talk more about what is it that JET actually does, and what was your experience with using F sharp? What is it like to work there?
Cool.
There's a safety exit that needs to be everywhere. Even if the rest of the building looks cool and hip, then there has to be a safety exit sign. I think we've lost you for a bit. It seems. No, now you're back. Now you're back. So we'll have to give Skype a few seconds to settle down and recover our connection.
No.
But I think we found. It probably finds a new Wi-Fi hotspot or something.
Yeah, let me plug in as well.
If you can plug in, then that will be a safer option. And then we'll have high performance, high quality stream again. So after a bit of setup, what is the thing in the background there?
So for each of our conference rooms, because we name everything after superheroes, all of our conference rooms are superhero hideouts. And this one is Atlantis. And I will be honest, I have no idea who that is relevant to.
Like Aquaman or something?
I was thinking Aquaman. I was like, I don't know if that's one of our teams even. So I wasn't going to say that, but yeah.
All right. So I think we are good to go. Video is looking good as well. So I don't know what would be the first question. I guess the first question really is, what is JET doing?
So
what's your plan?
You take over the world. Oh. Of e-commerce. JET is, you know, very heavy into microservices, event-driven microservices. F sharp, but most importantly, being on the forefront of technology, I would say, if John wants to add anything to that.
No, absolutely. We are, as I like to say, I don't know if it's fair to say that we're a small startup anymore, but we're definitely a relatively young startup with fairly large ambitions. I think at this point in time, we are probably the largest event-sourced platform that is out there. If we think about where we're going and where we're heading over the next 5 years, and we think about our targets as we continue to grow, I see us needing to grow by about two orders of magnitude in terms of the scale of our systems over the next 5 years, and that creates a series of extremely interesting and exciting challenges for us as an organization, or actually as a technology organization.
And when John says we're not really a small startup anymore, I know we passed 1,000 people a few weeks ago. I think we're near 1,100, 1,200 now.
1,200 people. How many of those are developers writing F-sharp code?
It's about 60, 65.
65. That's a pretty decent size.
Expectation is it will we're trying to grow by about to about 2.5 times that size by the end of the summer. So hopefully by the end of summer we'll probably have about 140 developers writing F-sharp code.
Wow. Yeah, I think Rachel already slipped a little innocent hiring mention into her talk. So I take this as another one.
Sizes.
And you have offices. The main one is where you are right now in Hoboken, and I've heard there's another one opening soon.
Yes. Our current location is, as you said, is Hoboken, at least in terms of our development efforts. We're strictly co-located in Hoboken. We are in the process of opening up another development shop in Dublin. And so that is actually actively underway, and we are in the process of starting to build,
currently hiring.
We're currently hiring the leadership team over there, and we have a few folks that that have already reached out to us who are, as I like to say, the active candidates that we're also, pursuing in parallel. So our hope is that we'll probably have about, 20, give or take, by the end of the year, on the ground in Dublin, and then continue to grow extensively from there.
Right. So we are getting one question from the audience here about how Jet got started with F-sharp, because I think there was actually an interesting story behind that. So how did Jet end up using F-sharp and say, Scala or C-sharp or Python?
So John and I were actually just talking about this. I have a bit of an interesting story. I know at Skills Matter every year holds a conference in New York that is the F-sharp progressive F-sharp tutorials. I know that
Rachel,
Mike,
can we just get you a bit more into the camera? Perfect, thank you.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's perfect.
So I know that Mike, the CTO, attended this the very first year that it happened, which I had also attended and didn't know this until like 3 months ago. But he was interested in F-sharp, thought this would be an interesting thing. And F-sharp at the time had this reputation of being good for math and science. And so he thought, well, when I create this website, I'm going to be creating something that'll need a pricing engine. So, that's an easy win for F-sharp. We'll make the pricing engine in F-sharp. And he hired the first couple developers. One of them was, very, very knowledgeable about F-sharp. That one developer started working on the pricing engine, the others building the rest of the pieces. And as the team started to grow, they started to talk about these, maybe we should be building more things in F-sharp. We're not really sure. They eventually decided to just completely split and have two completely separate solutions, one in F-sharp and one in C-sharp, and see what happens. And the F-sharp one obviously won out. But one of the main reasons was, those common overarching concerns, logging and whatnot. It became really, really easy with F-sharp to sort of, compose and pipe everything through and just add a step in the middle of this pipeline rather than, using this library that sort of confounded everything and didn't exactly work and didn't give us what we needed from the C-sharp and object-oriented side.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting story, because When people say, like, we had really good experience with F#, then they don't have this, like, valid comparison point. I guess there was one other project that Simon Cousins was talking about where, yeah, they also did, like, project in both languages and then had some comparison there.
I've heard people criticize that one because it was a rewrite. Hmm. And so obviously the F# was going to be so much better because, but in our case, at least, you know, this was side by side actual development of the two projects.
Yeah. So they didn't like, they didn't share any insider knowledge from the previous team.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a really interesting story. So I guess the other thing I'm really curious about, how do you find the sort of F# community? I guess there's lots of different questions here because there's sort of more like user group question, but there's also technical question. So maybe we could start with the technical one, and talk about the different libraries that you're using at JET, or how does JET see the technical F# community as a company that really relies on the infrastructure?
We use a ton of the different libraries. I know that we're heavy users of F#.data, but also Packet and Fake. Some of the internal training classes I've run are on, I've run one on how to convert a solution over to Packet, and then a couple other folks have run one on, you know, the in-depth internals of Fake and really, you know, how to make sure that you're using it correctly. You were about to say something, John.
Nope.
Okay.
There you go. You're doing an awesome job, Rachel.
And so a lot of our projects are very, very dependent on those three specifically. I know the JSON serialization from F#.data is, I would even say, crucial to some of the stuff we're doing.
Cool. And we were chatting before that about some of the sort of stuff that JET is working on that might turn into open source that you're going to share. So. Is this a secret, or can we talk about it?
Go ahead.
Pardon, I don't think that there's anything necessarily that's a secret unless, the expectation. You know, as long as it's not viewed as an absolute commitment that we will actually be able to continue.
No, I totally understand this, but my usual answer to this is that people should just not sort of think that when you put something on GitHub, it has to be done and perfect. Like, even the F# data library, it actually started as my demo for a talk that I did, and I put it like one file somewhere on GitHub, and then people discovered it and fixed it, which is the great thing about the community.
That's awesome.
I mean, there's definitely, one of the ones that we're currently looking at is Kafka. So we actually are, one of the guys on the team has actually built a preliminary prototype of a 0.9 Kafka client.
That's the one that I am most excited about.
Yeah, in F#. I think when we started, and just to put it to put it bluntly, when we started, there was no good F# or even .NET Kafka client. So that was actually a problem. Microsoft did just release their open source client, which they dub as production ready. It's a 0.8. It's a .NET client, so it's not an F# native client. I think that we still have an interest in demonstrating that we can actually build a much smaller and more efficient library by going F# native, even if they eventually do move over to 0.9. So I think that work will continue probably at a slightly slower pace than maybe it had before Microsoft's release, but we will continue to go down that path.
Cool. That's really exciting project. I do know like quite a few people who joined JET who are contributing to other F# projects in the community. I think Lev is working on did a lot of work on the F# async sequences.
Very much, yes.
So even though...
And it's Leo as well who's working on the Kafka client.
Oh, right. Well, now you have the real experts there. Cool, so that's on the open source side. And on the sort of more community side, So how do you find the F Sharp community in the New York area, or what are some interesting, I guess another thing to say is, what are some interesting events that are happening there that people should definitely come to?
Well, one thing I know that F Sharp, the F Sharp user group every month has labs that happen out in Brooklyn that just, it's meant as, so there is a Dojo component to it, but the original idea was to have sort of a drop-in, drop-out coding space where, you know, you can come and just hang out and work on F Sharp. If you have questions, ask them. And, you know, with a small side section of having this Dojo run, it sort of turned into something that is mostly Dojo every month, but it's still a wonderful thing, especially for beginners. There is also, of course, the regular F Sharp user group. And at JET, we're going to start holding a series of talks as, you know, as folks come into town, hopefully try to lure them out to JET for at least a lunchtime, hopefully, you know, perhaps an evening talk, user group style talk as well.
Oh,
so
cool.
That's starting like imminently.
And there was also a conference that you were running, right? Was it not too long ago?
F-Sharp Gotham.
F-Sharp Gotham.
We held it at JET. A great, a really fabulous turnout of speakers, you know, almost 100 people on somewhat short notice. I think there was only 2 months to plan it. It's like, I think I'm going to hold a conference. This would be awesome.
you had my childhood hero there. The guy who wrote Programming Windows. What is his name again?
Charles Petzold.
Charles Petzold. Yeah, that's probably the first Microsoft programming book that I've owned. So if you do it again, I'll come with my copy and get it signed. Although it's really heavy book and I have it in Czech, so he might not trust me. We'll see.
You'll have to go to Microsoft or Xamarin Evolve.
Oh, that's Xamarin Evolve.
I met Charles.
Ah, right.
I stopped by the little booth to get my copy signed and he's like, I'm so looking forward to your talk on F Sharp.
That's really cool. Do you use Xamarin tools as well at JET for some things?
We do. We're building an internal app using Xamarin. We wanted to have a full client experience from, you know, the moment people apply through, like, you know, as their employees and possibly on to, you know, once they're finished, alumni status.
Yeah. For the JET family.
Exactly. That's very, very early stages, but something I'm really looking forward to.
Cool. So I was just curious, do you have any idea how many lines of F Sharp code do you have there?
I have no idea.
That is actually, I actually.
It's fewer than 10,000 because it's not self-aware.
It's greater than 10,000, I can guarantee.
Is it bigger than the F Sharp type checker? I bet it is.
I'm trying to think through. We have probably, I mean, each one is relatively small, but we do have on the order of about 100 distinct repositories.
Wow. I usually say 350 was the number I knew maybe 6 months ago of microservices. So you get
there, and so, you know, if you then multiply that out, you know, we're definitely in the couple hundred thousand to 500,000 lines of F Sharp code at a minimum. I think the more important question of how many of those are actually touched in production and how many of those are deprecated lines of code.
Yeah.
All of them are absolutely crucial.
Of course, and then I get my orders for cheap when I'm in the U.S. So there's one more question I wanted to ask about. Oh, right, yeah. So there was a talk just now or just before from Henrik Feld, who was saying that with microservices, it's sort of not just about the technical aspect, but it's also about not just growing your code, but sort of growing your whole organization, where as you have the microservices-based architecture, you can actually sort of add new teams, which sounds like a really important thing for JET with the growth plan that you were talking about before. So how do you find sort of how do you find it when there's so much growth with F#? How does the language actually help you with it?
Well, I mean, I think we have to decouple our architecture, you know, both into the language that we're using as well as the way that we communicate between our between the microservices, and you know, and I think it's a well-known fact, right? We are event sourced. As I said, we're probably, you know, the largest event source platform, that is out there, which means that very often when we try to write a new service, it's actually fairly easy to go out and generate a whole new collection of microservices, feed off of the outputs or in fact, of one of the event stores. You start to feed off of those events and you effectively create a new microservice with relatively little interaction with the old systems. So, you know, I don't think it's strictly a function of F#. Obviously, it's a function of both F# and the ecosystem into which it fits. Good example is, of things that we've done is, we do have to do a bunch of, I hate to say it, we are an e-commerce site. We do a bunch of advertising, and so we generate, PLAs. These are product line advertising that, for example, we do with a company like Google, right? If you understand the way PLAs work for Google, pricing that gets shown that shows up at Google has to be consistent with the pricing that we actually have on our site, and so this is a very there's a very important matter here of keeping prices that are showing up on Google up to date. Our pricing engine, or the pricing system that we have is actually constantly computing, the base prices that are and recomputing. This is very much of a dynamic and ongoing process that is going on all of the time. That is basically being stored in one of our event stores, right? So we basically do have an immutable log of all the prices that we've ever generated, and the marketing engine that we created, all it really needed to do was effectively start listening to the pricing event store, and then was able to do everything else from there without with truly minimal interactions.
So
that's sort of the plus side. I always like to be a big proponent of the things that work. I also like to be fairly transparent about sometimes some of the challenges that we do that you do run into. One of the challenges we do run into is because pretty much all of our data processing is going through a pipeline rather than being a sort of a request response system. What will sometimes happen is events get lost, lost in flight. They get routed or handled in a way that is not immediately obvious, and debugging that is a little bit more challenging. And in fact, one of the things that we have been doing here in order to try to address that is we're building an internal system. We're calling it X-Ray, which allows us to basically provide correlation and identification of pretty much the origin of every event down to its destination, so that we can actually put both monitoring on the end-to-end flows that are occurring, as well as being able to identify if an event or anything has gotten lost somewhere, where it got lost, and where we need to go and take a look.
Right. Yeah. Well, that again sort of goes back to what Henrik was talking about with the importance of logging and tracing and being able to inspect what's happening in the system. You just mentioned the pricing engine, which I guess is really the secret sauce that's behind Jet. So can you tell us a bit, like, how is it possible that when I go to Jet, I get things for cheaper than from some other websites?
Oh, well, if we tell you, we're going to have to shoot you.
Ah, okay. Well, you can't do it because I'm on the other side of the country, right? Unless you have a rocket or something.
There is a constant. The answer is that basically every time that, you put something into your cart, right, we have this notion of a smart cart. And the more you put into your cart, the more opportunities there are to have savings. The savings come from things such as, if I can package things together or fulfill them from the same center, right, I can reduce the cost of packaging, I can reduce the cost of picking fulfillment, I can reduce the cost of shipping. This is just sort of a simple example. So you can imagine that we can have items that are located in different places or with different merchants with different distances. And so every time you put something into the cart, we actually go through an optimization exercise with the pricers in which we basically try to identify the optimal allocation of the items in your cart to actual vendors that creates the cheapest possible price. And now you have to watch out because I will have to send someone over to.
No. This all sounds good. That's a bit like some of the stuff I did when I was doing my undergraduate, because we had all these sort of simplex optimization.
Yeah. So we're doing a lot of permutations. I think I think on average for every time we do a checkout, we probably we consider on the order of about 90,000 different possible permutations of way in which to represent the cart. F-Sharp is certainly incredibly powerful in allowing us to basically generate a lot of those permutations in parallel and consume them back so that we can respond in milliseconds or hundreds of milliseconds rather than in hundreds of seconds.
And one of the other really interesting things, Jet sort of prides itself on being working very well with the merchants. So the merchants on the back end are able to set up zillions of different rules about what sort of savings, what sort of savings they'll give, what sort of shipping distances or shipping timeframes they'll allow. And so, we're taking all of that into account as well when we're calculating the timeframes and the prices.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. But now I guess I'm now worried that your system will really become self-conscious in a not too long. We've got some questions from the audience. So there's one about Events Store and Kafka. And I think the question suggests that you're moving from Event Store to Kafka. But the question sort of is, how do you use these two? Are you using Kafka Event Store? And what are you using for messaging? What are you using for Event Store? What's your approach to these two things?
So I think the right statement is Kafka is not replacing Event Store in our system. So that's
what I thought. That's why I was trying to rephrase the question a bit.
I do want to highlight that, right? The notion of creating an immutable record of all the events that have occurred in the system is not it does not get adequately handled by Kafka. What we are, however, doing is we have in many cases today a lot of our consumers of events, connect into Event Store in order to pull the events, and that's creating a fairly significant load on some of our event stores. So we're moving our messaging, basically our distribution of events to Kafka. So we're establishing, a replication node, we're bringing Kafka into the loop. It's also the case, that's there's a very direct relationship there between what we're doing with Event Store and what we're going to be doing with what we're starting to do with Kafka internally. It is also the case that there are many places where we ended up using Event Store, let's just say inappropriately, as a message bus, as opposed to using it as an event. Is an event store, is an event sourcing database, and that created a significant amount of pain. And so, for those places where we really don't need an immutable record, there is no reason for us to actually go through the storage exercise, and we will be using Kafka directly as the message bus.
All right, I think we've used our half an hour, so. Thank you very much for the answers. I think that the audience really appreciates this because there's been lots of talking about Jet in the F-Sharp community. You're one of the really interesting startups out there in general. And there's lots of people in the F-Sharp space really excited about it. So it's great to finally hear it from the most qualified people out there. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
This was tons of fun.
And we are going to come back in a few seconds with another talk. And this time it's going to be about Android and gesture recognition. So I guess we are moving, continuing the cool theme and moving towards the Internet of Things. So see you everyone in a few seconds.